Generate is supporting my vision to improve the financial literacy of 100,000 Kiwis by sponsoring Keep the Change. Cheers, Generate. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to find out more. Getting in the KiwiSaver fund that suits you and your situation is key to making sure you're maximising your investment. Generate are an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of long-term performance, and they can help you do exactly this. Their advisors can meet with you to talk about all your options when it comes to KiwiSaver to help you decide what's best for you. Too many people never get KiwiSaver advice, but not you. Go to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to book a no-obligation chat with a Generate advisor. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited. And of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. Welcome in. You are listening to a previously recorded podcast from the Keep the Change catalogue. Now, before you turn this off and think, no, I think I've already listened to that one, just remember that you might hear something in this episode that you didn't hear the first time round. That can happen because we change who we become in that time as well, and you may not have needed the information or the lesson at that time. So these lessons that are titled with an acronym to start, in case you weren't listening, are designed to bring you up to speed with some of the principles and some of the podcasts that people have said have really taught them something. Now, you might listen for a second time, or this could be the first time you listen because you've found Keep the Change later than other people. And that's completely fine. We're just stoked to have you here and listening to the podcast, increasing your learning. So please don't turn this one off. Get it in the old ears and let us know what you think. I said her from the city, so her got to be witty, witty. She said him from the country, so him got to be funky, funky. Welcome, and you are listening to another very special episode of the Keep the Change podcast. Now, just like when I spoke to Izzy the other day, I've spoken to another business owner this week that I think you can also learn from. Now, the person you're about to hear from built a business up from the ground and sold half of it for $1 million by the age of 23. By the age of 25, they had nothing left and they actually owed their parents $170,000. Now, this is a good example of how so often we look at other people and we think, shit, I'd love to be a millionaire. and all those other types of things that we think are really important. And then every now and then we get to hear from somebody and find out what that's actually like. Now, you're about to learn from Simon how he wasn't ready to be a millionaire. And this is often the case with people who win lotto. Usually lotto's gone, or an inheritance figure, an amount of money will usually be gone within about 3 years because people aren't actually ready. They haven't learnt to be that person. Now, Simon was chasing a number of different things that he thought were going to bring him fulfillment, and money was the last of that. And once he got that, he thought, well, what the fuck do I do now? So then he went on a journey of blowing the lot and self-sabotaging the whole thing, going into destruction mode, and then having to bury himself for the next 2 years to build himself back, tidy himself up, and repay his parents and get back on the bandwagon. So this is a story of someone that has gone from zero to a million, back to zero, to negative 200, to now tidying himself up, and he's probably a millionaire again, I'd say. But there are a number of lessons in here in this next hour that I think you will be able to take a lot from. Simon also has a course that I think is going to be very, very beneficial for a number of you that you can work through if you're looking at starting a business or scaling up a side hustle or just learning more about digital marketing. Now, he was frustrated by the fact that people were coming to him applying for jobs and they thought that they knew a lot about marketing because they had a marketing degree, but marketing theory does not get results for clients. And he was starting from scratch from them with them, trying to teach them actually what they should be doing on the campaigns for the clients that they were working on. So instead of being frustrated for longer and longer, he decided to build out some material that people could work through, and now a lot of people all around the world actually work through this content to basically take a university degree of theory, put it in the bin, and learn everything you need to know about e-commerce and digital marketing within about 4 months. So he sped up the process for people, saving them time and also saving them needing to get a student loan and waste years of their life learning theory that is outdated in a modern world of marketplace of marketing. So tune into this and see what you learn, and I'm sure you will take something from it. You're about to get started on an hour journey with Simon. If you're really interested in what he's saying, he's done a number of other podcasts and explained some of the things that he's been through in more detail. So if you search him on Google, you'll probably find a 2018 version of Simo where he was on First Dates and acted like a right douchebag. Those are his words, where basically I know, because I know the lad, he was basically trying to drum up attention for the business that he was running at the time. And that sort of backfired on him. But you can watch that if you like. But there is a lot of content about this lad, and you might find it interesting. So we'll piece this together in the next bit and listen with an open mind and see what you can learn. And if you want to get in touch with him, then I'm sure you'll be able to find him everywhere on the internet.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
Welcome in. You are listening to another episode of the What's Next podcast. We've got a very, very special and impressive guest on the podcast today. We've got Simon Phillips from the Magnitude Group. Mate, it is always good to see you.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me in.
This has only been about the 16th time I've tried to record this pod.
Yeah, how many times we bump it? Literally six or seven.
You're a busy man.
Yeah, hey, next week.
But we got you here. I was waiting for the... Today I saw on my calendar, I was like, shit, Simo hasn't bumped me yet, so that's a good start. That's a good start. But you've got plenty on your plate, mate. Firstly, your favourite tune, Tracy Chapman, Fast Car.
Yeah. Good tune. Why I love it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure why I love it. It's just always been around. I think it got its first legs during a breakup.
Oh, yeah.
Got played permanently for 6 months, and then
it had some meaning.
Yeah, it just stuck around.
Yeah. So does it jazz you up now, or does it like calm you down?
I just like it. I think it's a good bit of music.
Yeah.
You know, it goes across multiple genres, you know, it's multi-purpose. There was an EDM remix at one point. Ooh. That gave it a bit of life, you know,
yeah.
Rebranded.
I think you'll like this, I interviewed someone last week, and they have a concept where they only listen to one song every week.
Oh.
For the entire week to stay on the same kind of level of frequency.
Yeah, interesting. I'll do a big work bender. I'll do 6 or 7 hours on repeat, get into a zone.
Oh, one song?
One song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like that. I think it's the ADHD thing. You know. Like just lots of stuff or one thing.
We'll start there because you reckon that's a superpower, right?
Yeah, 100%. So what do I say there? Mental illness, could be framed as mental skillness, I guess.
Mental skillness, I like it.
Yeah, what I figured out how to do over 15 years was set myself up in a position where it is a superpower or a strength rather than a weakness. It's like, I use the analogy, it's like a river. You swim with the current downstream, you're good, you're going to go faster. You swim upstream, you're probably fucked.
Yeah.
Are we swearing a little bit?
Yeah,
not really.
You can help yourself. Yeah. I'm used to it with Phil and I.
So I like to say now, like if you tried to take my mental illnesses off me, I'd fight you to the death because they're what makes me special. It didn't work very well in school, didn't work very well in the normal job, but up and down.
Mm.
But yeah, the creativity, the hyper focus, one that when I'm interested in something, I can do 14 hours on one thing, you know.
Wow.
So what your greatest strength can also be your greatest weakness. You've got to figure out the framework to deploy yourself within, right? And for me, as I guess a digital marketer, business owner, etc., the positive sides of ADHD support me. Yeah,
that's
it's what makes me special.
Nice.
I don't take my meds.
That's what you don't take.
That's why I don't take my meds.
Right, so we'll go back to the start then, and because these days you run a very successful and industry-leading business called the Magnitude Group.
Yeah, I co-lead it. I'd argue my business partner leads the Magnitude Group and I support him.
Gotcha.
But, yeah.
But back to the start, so how we sort of crossed paths, school, university, and your sort of first foray, I think might be the terminology. Mm. You're very good with words and numbers, but your first foray into entrepreneurship, I think, was Fitwear, right?
Yep.
And that was probably what people would these days see as like a Gymshark, but probably ahead of your time. And you had stringers, you had different forms of gym apparel,
yep.
And you were really big on community. You were massive on Snapchat, Facebook groups.
Yes, yeah, Snapchat.
Doing all this shit years before everyone else started doing it.
Yeah, so I mean, I can do the brief story, which I guess sets the scene.
Let's have it.
Went to uni, did an accountancy degree, actually. Yeah, failed 5 out of 8 papers.
Not bad.
Nailed it, you know. And I was going to do a cadetship. I was always going to do accountancy. Figured out that probably wasn't going to work. At the time, I was a bodybuilder, and you couldn't get stringer singlets in New Zealand. I was like, oh, okay, I'll get a few of those. And then, so ended up, yeah, doing fitness apparel on Facebook. So, and I was I had a pseudonym NZ Shredder. I had a little, you know, alter ego online. Yeah. So Instagram athlete, yeah, 3 or 4 or 5 years before Instagram athletes were a thing. I remember seeing Gymshark going, that's a shit name, they'll never catch up to us. Whoops. So the rest is history there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of water under that bridge, but basically scaled that business quite easily, sold half at 23 for 1.1 mil, thought I was the fucking man, figured it all out. What I didn't realize at the time is I was basically smack bang in the middle of an arbitrage opportunity. Facebook ads were so cheap, everyone started going to the gym, you know, yeah. Right place, right time, a monkey probably could have done it. And so what that did though was easy come, easy go. I figured everything I'd touch would turn to gold. So I acquired a streetwear brand and started a skincare label and was kind of all over the show. And then by 26, I was living at home, 170K in debt. I'd rinsed every single last dollar and the seed money, which was a mortgage on my parents' house.
Shit.
And so I had absolutely nothing. I'd got into some trouble with the law as well. So I was, by all metrics, I'd gone from, you know, millionaire at 23,
yeah,
the man, to 26, absolute loser. I had a bit of a mental breakdown and went, okay, this is a obscene waste of potential because I know I can do better than this.
Mm.
And then, rebuilt. I spent 2 years, and I think this is a key part of the story, is I just made a decision. I'm gonna quit my life until I pay back my parents. That was the deal I made with myself. And so I went to one wedding in 2 years. That was the sum total of anything that wasn't working or working on my mental health to work more. I wasn't working the whole time, but I was very anxious. There'd been, you know, a couple of days where I couldn't get out of bed and it was very hard.
Yeah.
It was a journey of building discipline. And we rebuilt this business, got a couple of clients, started scaling them. That's where I met Brad Lindsay, my mentor. Together we launched Glass Elephant. And then we scaled a couple of brands globally, had some great success stories, did 50 million in 18 months with one of them. And off the back of that, we set up a global logistics network. So Brad owns a large logistics business in New Zealand, 3PL Logistics. And so one of the 3PL facilities in the USA let this client down. And so we said, well, that wouldn't have happened if we'd do it. So then, Brad led that, obviously, and I'm a small partner in the SCS global business. And so we set up logistics facilities in US, Canada, UK, Europe, and Melbourne. There's already 7 facilities in New Zealand. And that's kind of, I guess, the journey that kind of sets the stage to where we are now. Was started a brand, did great, hubris, lost everything, started an agency because I had no money. Success, got a mentor. That's a key point we should come back to.
Yep.
Basically saved my life. And then, we've built now the Magnitude Group, which is a digital marketing agency. We've got the Global Logistics Network as well, which supports, like, you know, the operational capability for brands trying to scale globally. And then we have a accelerator program, where basically we take the tools, systems, and processes we use in the agency to drive revenue for our clients. We give those to clients and students. We train them how to use them, and then we work with them on a weekly basis to troubleshoot whatever their biggest problem or maximize whatever their biggest opportunity is. So that's kind of, yeah, from the start all the way through to where we are today.
There's a bit to unpack there.
Yeah.
If we go to, like, what was the feeling selling that share for 1. whatever million at 23? You must did it sort of flick a switch, or did you kind of go off the rails quite quickly?
Yeah. So I was basically already off the rails. Like, I was quite, you know, I was on one rail, sort of.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
And then what had happened is I was basically like a not cool kid at high school and that desperately wanted to be cool. Mm. And then this is funny to say out loud, but I basically just wanted a really beautiful girlfriend. And so I had kind of built my life around that, and I'd gone out and I'd got massively jacked, you know, did heaps of gear to do that. And then I'd started this business and I'd gotten a bit of notoriety and I had a following. And so I'd gone out and like got all of the stuff that I thought I wanted, that I thought would make me happy. Bit of notoriety, you know, I had the beautiful girl, I was cheating on her, you know, just a young dickhead, basically. And then when I got that cash, because that was the final piece of the puzzle, and then I'll get the money, it'll be sweet, and then absolutely nothing happened. I was like, oh, God, okay, and that made me more anxious and depressed than I'd ever been. Because I was like, okay, well, I've done the thing now. I went and got all the stuff, bit of notoriety, beautiful girl, money, like, I've got everything I want. I feel there's nowhere to go. And then I suppose that's what spurred the 2-year spiral of just poor commercial decisions. And I was almost like watching it unfold, like knowing it wasn't really making a lot of sense. It's easy to say that in hindsight. Like I knew and I didn't know at the same time. But it was interesting because I got what I thought I wanted.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that. And then so I just basically destroyed it.
So did you just self-destruct the whole thing to the point where did you get to a stage where you knew that this was going to just end at some stage, or did you just think, fuck, I'm just going to ride this to the bottom and see what happens?
Yeah, it was that, but not conscious. Gotcha. So I was constantly like, you know, looking at it now, I'd go, okay, sunk cost fallacy, stop, sell that all, tighten up the business, maybe take 300 grand and pivot into something and with focus. But instead, I kind of just kept doubling down until there was absolutely nothing left while I was still spending, you know, I'd come through duty free with 6 grand worth of colognes and fancy whiskey for the team that no one cared about. You know, it was just silly stuff. It was just young and dumb.
Shortcuts, maybe?
Yeah, it was like if you go, when I think about life and what we're trying to achieve fulfillment, really. A lot of us don't know that. And then one back from that is like content and fulfillment, I think, is like a positive marriage. You've seen your kid graduate, a business like actually working and like supporting families consistently. And then contentment's like you wake up in the morning and you're kind of like, oh, you know, today's going to be all good. Might be tough, but, you know, you're not feeling too upset. Happy's like, you know, generally you're out with your mates, playing golf. And then there's fun, like pleasure. It's like getting pissed on the weekend. And I didn't have any of that stuff up the hierarchy. So it was all fun. It was all just fun till there was no resources left to have fun. Rock bottom, implosion. Okay, what am I going to do now? Start again. And I'll say this, it's quite confronting, but I remember the conversations in my head, like, it was like, if it hadn't been the mortgage in my parents' house, I would have either killed myself or, because I had nothing now, I had none of the stuff, none of my identity, the cool factor, I didn't have any of the cool people around me, I had none of the money, I had nothing that I'd built up, so I'd just gone back, and, or I would have just traveled, gotten like 50 grand together, cash advanced on my credit cards because I had about 150K with the credit cards and I was going to go on a trip. Then when I figured out, oh, I can't bankrupt out of this because it's in their name. And I was like, I didn't love myself enough to do it for myself, but I wasn't going to let them down. So then I was like, cool, delete life, build a business that'll pay back your parents.
Wow.
And then in that journey, I started to like learn to, I guess, love myself through effort, like effort and psychedelics, actually.
You know, yeah. Like, so when you crashed to kind of rock bottom, you'd built a pretty phenomenal group of people around you, or like you were a magnet for people, right? Because I think people were like, shit, here's the fun Simo, you're buying all sorts of different shit and you know, the social media life looks good and whatnot. So I'd imagine people were just going, oh, I want to be around that. What happened when you hit rock bottom? Did they kind of, a lot of them disappear?
Yeah. A lot of them disappeared. We weren't aligned. There was nothing for us to talk about or to do anymore. We weren't having benders. And then a few key people who I love to this day, they're on my list. They have like a list of all the people that either supported me or didn't scatter. You know, like Darren, for example.
Yeah.
Same, still working with us, Glass Elephant today. He's working towards being our head of content. And yeah, he was always there. We just kind of worked through it together. But yeah, for the most part, all those superficial, vapid relationships that I'd built up, and I don't blame them. I was using them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going like, oh, you guys F me. It's like, no, it was a transactional relationship.
Gotcha.
I knew what I was getting and they knew what they were getting and we didn't have it anymore. So it was done.
Yeah.
And then I also was unable to go. I basically ran away and hid and like, I didn't. I just hid away in Palmy and built the thing again.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't willing to like engage until I had something again.
Mm. And what was the convo like with your olds to go home and be like, fuck, I'm rock bottom here. I need your support. I want to repay you.
That's the thing. I'm lucky. So I sit here today and successful, et cetera. But you look at successful-ish. We'll talk about what happened in the last year.
Yeah.
Because there's been another, you know,
roller coaster.
Yeah. Almost got in there three times now. My parents are like outrageously supportive. So they never once throughout that entire process were like, when are you paying us back? I think everyone could see I was trying my best, like I was putting everything into it. So maybe that was part of it. But no, there was never a question. I couldn't have done anything I've done really without them. They've always like, you know, they're the type like, oh, you want to move out of your flat? Cool, we'll put the trailer on, we'll come down, we'll grab all your stuff, you know? So nice. It might look like I get the credit or I'm responsible for the outcome, but there's a village of people that have supported me and I was lucky enough to be born into.
Yeah.
Like that family. And then when I was lucky enough, I guess, to meet Brad and to get his support.
Yeah. And so what has mentorship done for you from in terms of that part of your journey?
Yeah, so and that's the big two things I credit with that initial sort of comeback were getting sober and getting a mentor, right? So getting sober is obvious, like stop inputting all this damaging stuff into your body, which is giving you fun today. Like it's in service of your short-term pleasure system and in disservice to your long-term objectives. And then getting a mentor, someone who is where you want to be and knows how to help you get there. And then there's a bit of luck in meeting Brad, but also like you create your own luck to some degree, right? And so my methodology there is to, I knew, I was looking. I was like, okay, I fucked this up, but I have a lot of raw capability. I need someone to help me get there. And then so when I met him, it was like kind of figured out pretty quickly, oh, this dude, it's like he's got all the bits and pieces. How can I be of service? How can I be valuable here? And then it's just like give, and then figure out. And then we figured out, oh, you've got a large logistics business focused on e-commerce. We've got an agency that drives revenue for e-commerce. Well, if we partner, I basically went to him and said, I'll give you half my agency if you can put 50K seed funding in so we can scale it. You look after the back end. I'll look after the front end. Together, we'll build what would have saved me.
Nice.
So it's not...
Do you truly believe it would have saved you?
Yeah. 100%. I could go back and see. I could go... And our agency went through a journey. GE 1.0 could have saved me. GE 2.0 would have been tougher. And GE 3.0 and where we're at now, it would be. It would be in a position I go back and have a chat with that kid and go, look, you know, you're on top. You've got a tiger by the tail. You're on top of a gold mine. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. You've built a community and you like fitness. Right, here's actually the six steps you need to do in this prioritized order. How would you like to go about this?
Nice.
You know?
Yeah. Do you reckon old Simo would have listened?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But it wasn't necessarily the point. It was like, build a business that had the capability to save that kid.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That could allow, nice. Could facilitate his ability to develop product, build community, and focus on the brand, which is what like brand owners should be doing.
Yeah.
Building a competitive advantage in their product, building a brand, and building their community and engaging with their community.
Yeah.
And so we'll take care of the technical bits. Whereas kind of a lot of where I got lost was in those technical bits.
How often do you bump into people from the original Fitwear community?
Like, well, a lot of them are still my close friends, you know? So quite often in terms of like randomly on the street, like a couple of times a month, like I'll see a stringer at the gym. I'll always walk over, say hi.
I was rocking my
sweat.
I was rocking my t-shirt the other day, and it's the one without the vowels. You know how you strip the vowels out? And then I was in a store. I think it was like Torpedo 7 or something, and they had some brand, some like really well-known brand, and it was clearly the name without the vowels. And I said to my girlfriend, I was like, do you know why they've done that? She's just like, what are you talking about? I'm like, that's fucking Fitwear. One point
it took that.
Yeah. And she's just like, yeah, okay, mate, like what? But I still get a lot out of wearing my one, and I've seen the odd person every now in the gym wearing their piece of kit. And I just think it's a cool thing that you've still got a little bit of that. Maybe it's not legacy, but there's still breadcrumbs that you've left behind that people have still got a hold of. And then, you know, I wonder if they are holding on to that for a bit of inspiration, almost in support of like, we want to see you do well.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially I've got it. Like what happened when I exited is basically my business partners who had a lot more cash. They basically bought the other half back off me for no money, but then they were too busy to run it. So there's a little dream bubbling away in the background that once we get sorted and we get in a sustainable place, we'll buy it back and we'll relaunch like a limited range. It'll be sick.
We'll just
do it, you know. Wow. It'll be Fitwear 2.0. so
the next part of your journey, once you find your mentor, once you start to clean yourself up, it's probably like Project Tidy Up for Simo, but that's where you're really, you said something really interesting before, and like I've gone on this journey myself trying to teach yourself discipline. I think we get a little bit of that at school, if you're in the right school, for instance, but you don't realize that that's actually what you need out of that environment until later on in life when you're doing shit that's bad for you and you're unraveling yourself and you realize like, oh, if only I had a bit more discipline, I'd probably be further down the path that I know I should actually be going on.
Yeah.
So we've called this one Discipline in Digital Marketing.
Yeah.
But how important has discipline been for you in terms of recreating yourself?
Discipline's the thread that runs through it all. It's the exponent, you know. It's everything, actually. It's, you look at the dishwasher, and this is my example. You look at the dishwasher, and it's like, or you open the dishwasher, and it's full. You're like, all right, do I rinse off the cup in the sink and just leave it there to self-dry? Or do I unpack the dishwasher, which I know I should do, and do it?
Yeah.
And it's that decision. And then there's a scaled up version of that. You see the email in your inbox and it's a rejection to a proposal that you spent heaps of time and you're like, oof. And so do you leave it for 3 days and come back to it later, which is what I do, or do you open it now and tackle it? And so discipline for me is the ability to make the decision in service of your long-term objectives over the decision that's in service of your short-term comfort. And those happen every single day, constantly, all day. And so it's just my ability to make that decision wasn't there. What would happen is basically I have a lot of raw capability, I suppose, and so I could build stuff despite like underperforming. And then when it was all coming crashing down and it was a disaster and my back was against the wall, I wouldn't have discipline, but it was like, I guess, adrenaline or excitement. It was something that would allow me to just get heaps of workflow out the door.
Yeah.
What that kept me trapped in was a cycle of boom and bust.
Gotcha.
And I'd never fully fail because this thing would turn on. And so if you go back and look at my life, like I've got an older brother and an older sister. There's about 10 years and then there's me. So I was kind of the baby of the family. And then they left the uni a little bit early, so I was almost like the only child as well. And so I tell a little story. My mum and dad used to bring me like KFC at morning tea sometimes. The kids would be eating sandwiches, I'd be having KFC. And it's like, I think it created my view on the world where anything's possible. Like, there's no really rules. It's just like, well, we could do that. We could make that happen. But at the same time, I never developed early, like, oh no, I have to do this. Sorry, you know, brain, turn the switch. And then that's basically what I've built over the last 3 years with Brad. Like, I've had someone that's held me accountable and just slowly rep after rep after rep. Like, Wim Hof in the mornings was part of the journey. Yoga. Now I've got an ice bath in my house and a sauna. Not, you don't need an ice bath and a sauna. I started with cold showers.
Yeah.
But just putting myself in positions time after time. It's a muscle. So you want to get big pecs, do heaps of bench press. Like, you want to build, you want to build discipline. You want to make decisions in service of your long-term outcomes. Then just constantly repping those hard calls. And then now, you know, I have a new baseline. Whereas even 18 months ago, there was no guarantee that I'd be able to put in Monday to Friday, 8 hours a day on the high priority task and be consistent for my team.
Yeah.
Like, I might just have a day where I cave, just give up.
Yeah.
And now I can. And there's been no magic in it. It's just reps.
Mm.
And yeah, without discipline, what are we really? We're a slave to our daily emotions. Yeah.
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 And we see that with clients and with different business owners, and they'll sort of talk you through what's going on, and you think, yeah, it's almost offensive to tell someone, yeah, there's no discipline here. Because they're not even looking at it like that. They're stuck in the, oh, but last week I got this client, but then we haven't had any inquiry for 3 weeks or whatever, and it'll come back next week. And, you know, and it's like everything's not their fault. And at some stage you have to make that decision, I think, to go, you know what, like, I need to generate the inquiry or whatever the situation is in business. And, like, you know, I need to go back to that person. I need to follow up that lead. I only called them back once. Maybe I need to call them back twice.
Yeah, extreme ownership. And what you'll find, especially for small and medium businesses, is all the things you're avoiding are the things that you really need to do.
Mm.
Always.
Yeah.
It's always the way. And so if you don't have discipline, you'll find yourself constantly busy, not working on the highest priority task, which is a surefire way to allocate resource poorly.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you're doing, you're in your emails, yeah, I'll check the emails again, I'll get those out the door. Yeah, I'm fucking getting it done, da da da. Yeah, but hold on, if we zoom out and we use our decision making framework to understand what's the high leverage task, what's the high priority task, what's the thing that actually makes this work, what's the 20 that delivers the 80?
Yep.
And you'll find, like, there's obviously exceptions that proves the rule, but I see it in my team, I see it in myself, I see it in my friends. Those things that will make it win or lose, they're scary, because if it doesn't work, you might be fucked. Rejection is a huge one, emotional rejection. And then it's also like, well, if that doesn't work, I know I'm losing. It's almost like looking under the bed.
Yeah.
You know, you're having to look at the monster, and then it's easier to just put it off for another day or two. Put it off for another day or two.
Yeah.
So discipline allows you, I think, to work on the highest priority task, which is, I'd rather any business owner put 2 hours a day into the high priority task of deep focused work than 8 hours a day into periphery stuff.
Shit. Yeah, yeah.
Shit stuff.
Nice. So the Wim Hof ice bath, sauna, that sort of thing, is that you putting yourself in a position that you know you necessarily don't need to do? And then secondly, it's uncomfortable, but you're teaching yourself those reps of get it done.
Get it done. Yeah, exactly. It's just, I mean, if you've been in an ice bath or a cold shower, just before you turn it on, everything in your body is going like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And you go, fuck you. You turn it on.
Yeah, yeah. Let's roll.
Yeah. And then that's just a rep. You've just done the thing. It's exactly the same as looking at your phone and going to dial that customer that you know should have been a sale, but has said no twice. And you're like, nah, I'm going to go again.
Yeah.
Look, mate, just give me a second here. I think you're making a really poor decision.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, it's a helmet. It's the same feeling, whether it's an ice bath. For me as well, kickboxing was a life changer. I can't believe I left that one out. Got into Muay Thai maybe like a year ago with my flatmate, and then started to train seriously. And that was the most distinct uplift in my discipline I'd ever seen, because where I would avoid the gym, you can't avoid the gym because you kind of got your pad holding partner, so you have to turn up. And then I had my first fight, and there's a fight coming up, so like, I cannot turn up today, but then I'm probably gonna get knocked out in front of my missus.
Yeah,
like, that's a big incentive.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you hold pads, and they hold pads. So it's a buddy system. There's like
accountability.
Yeah, it's accountability. There's nowhere to escape. And then you're putting it all on the line. Like, it's emotional. You're getting punched in the head. You're punching them. You've got to control your emotions. It baked into me all of these different skill sets, emotional control and discipline, and anxiety control and fear control. Because if you get fearful and tense and fight, you're just going to lose.
Yeah.
So you have to learn all of that stuff. And so whatever it is, cold water therapy, saunas, runs, kickboxing, don't care. All of those modalities are specific tools I use to develop discipline, because my core objective still is to build a business that can provide a sustainable life for myself and my family. That's what I've always wanted to do. I'm going to die trying.
Nice.
So
that's your ultimate goal as such, because I have a question here later on. Where are you going?
Yeah, 10 mil net worth. I mean, with inflation rate recently, it's probably 15 now, which I think is like a nice home, a beach house, a little boat, a couple of nice cars, ability to travel.
Yeah.
You know, and if there's that experimental cancer treatment that my kid needs, well, we can get it.
Yeah.
That's how I've always thought about it. Money doesn't make you happy, but it gives you a lot of options. Yeah, right. There you go.
I love that. And I just want to touch on that for a second, because I was at a conference on the weekend. There's a lot of negative chat about profit and about money. And I think that's the Kiwi way, right? We get taught, fucking rich people are evil, you know, all that shit. And then people say, like, oh, you know, we always work with business owners. Oh, I don't need to pay myself that much. You know, like, that's a lot of money. And I'm like, yep, okay, but this business can do that. So if it can, why not have a crack? And then I'm trying to get better at saying to them, you might not need the money, but what about your community? What about your church? What about your family? What about if your mum rings you? Hey, just found out I've got cancer, can't afford the treatment.
That's the best analogy I've ever used. People go, money doesn't make you happy. I go, well, if I'm the father that can afford the experimental cancer treatment that saves my daughter's life, and you're the one that can't, and you're doing a give a little or whatever, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that's happiness right there. Mm. Like, supporting and being having the capability to look after the people that you love that's happiness in a number form.
Yeah.
You know, if you, but, and this is coming from a place of like, you know, I made that $1 million young and I got all the stuff and I used it for the wrong reason. I had two fucking cool cars and I had a gun collection and we were gone benders and all the stuff. That definitely didn't make me happy. I had the options. I was using the optionality incorrectly. I was young. I didn't have the personal and spiritual development yet to understand how to allocate that resource to actually achieve happiness, contentment, fulfillment.
Yeah, nice. So where are you at now in your business journey? How's the Magnitude Group going in GE version 3.0?
There
must still be some trials and tribulations along the way.
Yeah, so it's been an intense journey. We when we really launched into GE 1.0, and we got these profit share deals and we scaled a couple of brands really, really quickly, so we made a lot of money, and then we were like, okay, cool, that's going to keep going. And then so we hired some really high powered professional people and we got up to 85 team members. We had 60 clients. I think again it was like bigger is better. The modality. A few key things shifted in the market. iOS 14 came out, you know, privacy tracking, reduced efficacy of Facebook, Instagram ads, COVID died down. And because we were smack bang in the middle of that as well, that definitely empowered what we were doing. We didn't realize at the time, again, easy to see with hindsight. And so we just got to this point where we were losing money. The clients weren't getting the deliverables they should have. And so we went into a restructure. And so we've restructured from 85 team members down to 35, and now in the agency. And so now what we have is, I think we have 12 clients, and we basically operate with them almost like a marketing cooperative. It's not really an agency. We're not looking to make a profit on our agency clients. Basically what we do is we have agency partnerships. So we're partnered with some of the top direct-to-consumer agencies all over the world, conversion rate optimization, email, they're specialists. It's all they do. We work with them and to aggregate their intellectual property. We deliver it for our brands, like 8-figure and mid-7-figure brands, and our internal brands, which are smaller, they're mostly startups. And then we homogenize that intellectual property. We cover our cost base in the agency, and then we sell it. We disseminate it at scale through the Magnitude Marketing Accelerator, which is kind of what I touched on earlier. All those tools, systems, and processes, here you go, you have them. And then we'll train you how to use them. and then we'll work with you weekly to troubleshoot, to give you that strategic guidance that you need that's born really out of experience. And so what it does is it democratizes the intellectual property previously reserved for clients that can afford a 25, 30K a month retainer.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's working really well. Like it's working again. We're scaling. We've got a really attractive budget that we're looking at. And I think it's just the future in terms of like our logistics business as well. That's going great globally, filling up. Again, I'm a very minority partner in that, and I support with strategy and I help get some leads in there, but that's really my mentor and boss as well, Brad's gig to run. So yeah, it's been interesting though. Like I stepped back in 6 months ago as general manager and weren't sure if I could do it. Like the conversations were basically like, I guess I'll have a stab. And then we've made it through. And so we've reached, the objective was to get to stability. We had a couple of months there where we were, 10, 20K within just making payroll, having enough cash to make payroll.
Yeah.
And then now we're in a strong cash position and we're breaking even on the agency business. And so what that provides is now we've got this education model that we can scale quickly that mostly goes to the bottom line because of the way the business is set up.
Mm.
So... And 6 months ago we could have folded it. You know, it could have been like, this is over.
Yeah.
But it was interesting after the first time of Fitwear, I remember thinking, probably just be easier to start again. This is da 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 da. I didn't realize the value of momentum.
Yeah.
It's so much harder to start again. It cost me 2.5 years in Palmy, which was all good because I was with mum and dad. It was fine, like fine for me, but gosh, that's 26 and 27 gone, and so I knew like no, it's way harder to start a new thing, keep the same thing going. That was a massive lesson that I learned viscerally. And so we pivoted and then we drove that business model, and it was a slight edit, but it was all based on the feedback that we were getting. You know, the market had gotten more difficult. It wasn't enough to like make a bit of content and run a few ads anymore, because when the ad inventory was cheap, when all the big boys weren't spending on Facebook and like there was new placements and stuff and we could get the ads really cheap, that all you needed to do was make a bit of content, put on Facebook, press go, get paid $4,000 a month, you're winning.
It was unreal.
That it doesn't really work anymore.
No.
And so we were unable to service these clients. I'm going, well, what do we do? Like, I can't recommend they go to another agency, like, because they'll get the same outcomes. Like, we're doing our best and there's no secret source that we don't know about. Well, hold on. What if we empower them with the tools to do it themselves? Because they know their brand, they know their product, they're passionate, they can own the resource, they can get a junior team member in and deliver to the capability. Because that's kind of what you buy from an agency, is the IP and the strategic guidance. So if we just take the juicy bits and then empower the brands to deliver that, that will service that entire section of the market. And if they're getting big enough and they really want to scale into 6 regions, da 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 da, cool, come and talk and we can do an agency deal. But we need 15, 20 grand a month minimum to really dig in and do it properly.
Gotcha. Does that include ad spend? No.
Nah, that's just resource. Management. Yeah, that's nice. Just resource. It's just team. And that's at cost. that's not even with margin.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot to learn everything you know about your business intimately to then present that to a customer, etc. So I guess if I try and boil it down to like, making it work this time and kind of saving it, it was knowing how valuable momentum is and just dog with the bone. It was the discipline I was doing 80 minimum up to 100 hours a week. I did that for 4.5 months straight, just every single day. But I'm a bit of a night owl, so it was 8 a.m., 8, 9 a.m. through to midnight every day and weekends.
Yeah.
And so it was just, couldn't have done that without the discipline. Wouldn't have done it if I didn't realize how valuable momentum was. And then it was just identifying like what's going on in the market. And we'd already been doing Thrive with Shopify, the free version of the Magnitude Marketing Accelerator, for the last 4 years. And so it was kind of like, that market feedback, analyzing a core problem in the market. I was also looking at the impending recession, going, what's a product that will stand up in the recession? well, people aren't going to stop doing business immediately, but they'll look for a more efficient way. Mm. Your agencies are going to keep underperforming, and where it was okay to just let them keep going, it's, they're going to be looking for solutions. Hey, pretty sure your agency's full of shit? Try this. Yeah. You know, either do it yourself or at least be able to challenge them. Speak their language. Know what they're telling you. And so it was repurposing something that existed within the business, realizing the value of momentum, having the discipline to be able to repurpose that, because I like owned the destiny. I was like, I'm doing it. Lead from the front. Let's go. And then that's got us to where we are now, staring down the barrel of six-figure monthly profits again.
Wow. How good does that feel?
Sick. It's so good. I'm really, it's the most proud of myself and the team. And I, it's a bit egotistical to say like myself, but genuinely it's the most proud of myself I've ever been, because I've, despite all the things I've done, I've always kind of been like, you suck. Yeah. You know, that's the internal dialogue.
Yeah. And I suppose you had the opportunity to just quit, right? And go, fuck this, or just start something again. But you were smart enough, you had the discipline to go, you know what? No, I need to dig in.
And I need to dig in.
Yeah, yeah, 80s, 100s. And then you've built the discipline to allow you to do that. And now you've tidied it up.
Yeah.
It's like you had to tidy yourself up, then you tidy up the Magnitude Group or Glass Elephant, and then now you're like, oh, shit, I can do this.
Yeah, there's Jordan Peterson vibes in there. Make your bed.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, I have the ability. I never could rely on myself to get up at the same time each day.
Mm.
And there's another piece in here as well. There's a, this, obviously, conflation, you know, like a conflation of events happen at the same time. Google popped up because of the internet and power and data and people. And so there was the business itself. There was having Brad as a mentor, was a core. And then there was getting into a relationship with my partner, Ariel. So she's given me a bedtime. Like, yeah. I can't manage my own bedtime because I get stuck in Netflix and the dopamine just keeps me going. Like, I've got a super addictive personality. So she's giving me a bedtime. She supports, like, with all of my food and everything. Like, I couldn't exist the way I am without it. Like, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done that six-month journey without her supporting me. Yeah. So there was that as well. That was key, like, a key partner. And then the Muay Thai and finding my coach Kane and then building that. It all kind of came together. And I just finished my first fight after when we started to discuss the kind of restructure stuff. And so I'd come out of that going, oof, like I can do this. Like, I'd faced down the scariest thing I could possibly face down, which was my girlfriend's outside the ring, for me at least, videoing this fight. And I remember thinking, like, okay, like, what's more potentially embarrassing or emotionally damaging than getting knocked out live on Instagram in front of your girlfriend? There's not much. And I did that. And so I'd have the conversation with myself every day before, like, an email I didn't want to open or a thing. I'm like, you got in that ring, you can't do this.
Mm,
so nice. That became a mental model. And then I have a
Did you win the fight?
Yeah, yeah. It was sloppy. It was like, it was a technical
you
win.
You didn't get knocked out live on Instagram.
Yeah, that's no, it was
a technical win, all right.
It was a sloppy win. So, and that's what your first fight's always like, apparently, except for phenoms. There's a few naturals who just go in there and Israel Adesanya out the gate.
Yeah.
But I'm not that guy. I'm a grinder, you know? So, yeah, it was again, I have this mantra, which is probably a good time to bring up. So it's, and I use this and I get in the ice bath and I repeat this out loud and I don't use it enough. I'm looking at it now. I'm going to say this loud on the podcast.
Yeah, let's
roll. And then I need to actually.
So you're looking at your phone and your notes app. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's
listening. Yeah.
Yeah. It's $10 million a year and online education is achievable. I have the raw capability of producing a top 0.1% result in any digital marketing field. I am able to identify the highest priority task. I am becoming disciplined enough. If I fully crack discipline, I will be able to work exclusively on the highest priority task. I have proof that discipline can be developed slowly over time. I've proven I will not give up under any circumstances. Look at what I achieved 25 to 30. It's reasonable to 10x this at minimum 30 to 35, the normal age that people do this at anyway. Putting something up is better than putting nothing up. Just start, keep it simple, leave it all in there. And then what I did is took that to all the people in my life that I respect and I got them to corroborate and agree that each one of those axioms is true. And then so when my mind and my emotions are trying to get me to take the easy way out, I look at this and I know that's true. Wow. The voice in my head right now, that's not true. That's fleeting. myself in the right state of mind and everyone I respect agrees that's truth. So that is my truth. And then so I use that to enable myself to do the hard thing in service of the long-term objective, not in service of short-term pleasure.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I've got something similar where I've recorded it in voice so I can play it on my phone.
Yeah.
And then affirmations as well, but then, yeah, effectively like a manifesto as such. But, yeah, I don't think I'll be at the stage to play it out loud for people, so I think I've probably got some work to do. Like, if you can get to the stage where you can give that to people and say, call me out on it, if you think that this isn't actually true,
yeah,
or isn't actually how I roll.
Tell me each one of those are true. And that's because that's the bit like, oh, yeah, I don't know. No, I know this to be true. This is as true as I'm going to get it. If all the people in my life that I love and respect think it's true, like, what is true if not that?
Yeah.
Nice,
mate.
Yeah, so that's cool. And then I've got, and what I did, this might help people with the content, is avid listeners, is I reached out to people on my Instagram because I have a problem with creating content, which everyone does, right?
Yeah.
And it's silly because I'm good at it and I can do it quickly and I had the Snapchat and stuff, but it was interesting. I could create content under an alter ego. That Snapchat and stuff back in the day, that was NZ Shredder. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
So I can't. I now have to create content as Simon Phillips, which is harder. And so what I did was I reached out to these people and said, hey, would you be interested in my content? Like, could you tell me what you think? What do you think of the content you see from me? And I got back stuff from people like, love this, appreciate the knowledge and wisdom, love hearing your words of wisdom, bloody valuable, just listen to your podcast, your boy's on fire. And so I got all these people. And so when I want to not do the thing or not post the thing, which I have been not doing, it's like, well, I'm not doing it for anyone else but these people. They want to hear it.
Punch it out. And that's why it's putting up something is better than not putting anything or whatever it was, right?
Yeah, that's the last line. Like,
yeah.
Just start, keep it simple, leave it all in there. And that line right there, that's actually the mantra for the kickboxing fight. Just start, throw something.
Yeah,
like you beat it when you're an amateur, you better start. You better just throw something and then keep it simple. You don't need to do a spinning heel tornado kick. Just how about like a 1-2 low kick?
Yeah.
And then leave it all in there. Like, die in that ring. And that's what I did, basically. I left everything in there. So if I can do that in a fight for my life, I can do it tapping away on the keyboard at home, sipping on a mocha latte, you know? Like, this is not as hard.
Yeah.
And so...
It's we make it hard for ourselves.
Correct, yeah.
Mm. Just take you back to the accelerator program. So you've basically built a tool that allows anyone to start to learn how they could scale up an e-com product or a good or a service, basically, and they don't have to have any marketing experience, or where do they need to, they have to have like a starting point?
Yeah, absolutely nothing. My view is that you can come into this program, and there's a long story here and a short story here, but you do this program, you'll outcompete a 3 to 4 year marketing grad in 3 months. No doubt.
Wow.
I know. And well, I mean, I hire marketers every day. I hire revenue generators. Like, I'm not looking for someone that's like going to market my stuff. Like, can you create revenue or sales or leads that will turn into sales? That's what we're after. And so I suppose what we've done, if we go back a step, it's like the current education system, despite the fact that it's the only thing that could save human civilization, is
do you want me to say it?
Yeah.
Shit.
It's shit. And it's systemically shit. Charlie Munger.
It's not fit for purpose.
Yeah. Charlie Munger said, you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. And the incentive in education is not to set people up to be deployable. That's what we train, deployable skills. So it's this about like, let's educate you on this esoteric stuff and go through a 4-year journey and mark it off and the lecturers win, then the people above them win and the government's paying for it anyway. Like, it does, you know? So our thing is, we built this to make people deployable. You come in, we train you, and there's a metaphor for this as well. It's like, basically what we're doing is giving you, if you were chopping down trees, let's say marketing's chopping down trees, and you got two options. You can build your own axe, or you can come and you can use my axe, and it's pre-sharpened, super sharp axe, and then I'll just show you how to swing it. Then I'll show you which trees are easier to chop down. You can cut down more trees, right? Or you can go and learn the theory of chopping down trees for 4 years. Like, I'm just going to give you an axe and go, like, start swinging.
Yeah.
No, you're swinging a bit wrong. Do it that way.
Yeah.
And it's straight to the point. It cuts to the chase.
Mm.
And so, yeah, we make people rapidly deployable. Like, you get the immediate skills to generate revenue, which is what counts. Like, and that might dovetail into what I'm talking to business and businesses about at the moment. Like, there's four mental models or keys to success moving forward. And one of them is razor sharp revenue generation capability. Nothing happens until someone sells something. Revenue's the lifeblood. Recession, maybe a depression. You're staring down the barrel. It's really scary. Sell more stuff. Mm. Like, and that dovetails into, you must have self-determination. Own your own destiny. You know, going into a tough time, the one that cares the most, like, about the business is you. And so, and revenue and sales is the lifeblood, you know. So own the ability to generate that. And in today's day and age, that is digital, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's paid content, organic content, whatever. It's not the only way. Like, we've got an e-com brand at the moment that was really struggling to break the funnel with Facebook ads. And so Steven, he's now doing like the expo circuit. He's doing, you know, doing $4,000 or $5,000 a weekend and acquiring customers that way. So, but it's still like, it still leverages digital. Anyway, that's the key point of the program, is it's not about esoteric maybes. We're literally going, we've spent $100,000 on this ad over the last 3 months and it's made this much money. Here's how to make this exact ad for your brand.
Nice.
And then in that process, you can think about it like digital marketing with the gutter guards up. You're not throwing gutter balls, so you don't give up. You don't quit. You know, when you throw like six gutter balls, you're like, oh, fuck it, the kid doesn't want to play anymore.
Yeah.
And we're kids, when you start something new, you're basically like a kid. You're figuring it out. But the gutter guards allow you to bounce off and get a few pins. Oh, okay. And then you work towards getting the strikes.
Nice. Work it. So people could run their staff through it to learn?
Yeah.
Even people that are running an SME, or like starting a startup, maybe, you know, they've got a product they're trying to sell and scale, they could learn how to do that and
My view is every single owner should do this. Like, every single CEO, every single managing director, every single anyone should understand the language that the agencies or freelancers or whoever it is that you're working with are speaking. And like, our program is 12 modules, 2 hours each. So in 24 hours, you get this fire hose, you get drenched in best practice.
Yeah.
You're enough to be dangerous now. You know, you're just like, you know, you might
put the guards down, baby.
Exactly. You can chuck a ball down. Like, one of the things we have in every module is the cheat sheet, the question cheat sheet.
Yeah.
So a copywriter, I say, oh, you're a copywriter. Okay, cool. Can have a look at your portfolio. What's your research process? Do you use Reddit at all? Like 7-8 questions where at the end, if they're going, oh, I'm not sure, you know, you're like, they're not a goodie. You know, so we just equip people with the ability to call bullshit.
To not get shafted.
Yeah. Exactly. And then the next step is the way that our program works, and there's programs like this in the world, but none of them are as good as ours. And you get a couple of seats. And so whether your team member comes or goes, whatever, you put them back through the program. And then one person weekly is catching up with us to get that strategic advice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Back to the four keys to success. So one of them was razor sharp, I think, ability to generate
revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else we got in there?
Yeah. So razor sharp ability to generate revenue. Key, self-determination, the ability to own your own destiny, you know, like in a tough time, well, good times, bad times, but especially bad times, you want to be able to, like, kind of, in my view, push a few people aside and go, no, we're doing this. That, you know, if there's an agency relationship in your business, that if it fell over, like, is that a critical fail point? So owning self-determination, owning your own destiny. And I see a lot of businesses that have their revenue generation capability kind of outsourced. There's like a few chinks in the armor.
Yeah.
And so you don't need to get rid of those immediately, but if they did disappear, or if they started to underperform, would you be stuck going, oh, please try harder, please do more? Or can you go, you're out, boom, I'm going to do it. Or you're out, I'm going to hire this freelancer and I'm going to manage them effectively to do it. So that was one. And then cash preservation. So that's probably actually number one. It's like, cut costs, increase revenue. It's like the way to preserve cash, right?
Yeah.
So how can you be extremely efficient with your allocation of resources going into this next stage? Late 2022 into 2023. Look at that P&L. Like, where's the fat? Get rid of it. Now, not when it's too late, not later. Like, get rid of the fat now. Like, lean it up now and start stacking cash, right? And then a touched on a little bit earlier, bulletproof decision-making framework. Do you know which questions to ask? Do you know how to ask them? Do you know how to discern the right answers? And then do you know how to prioritize the answers and drive your objectives and key results off the back of it? Yeah. So it's like razor sharp revenue generation capability, cash preservation, decision-making framework, own your own destiny. And like those three things kind of facilitate your ability to own your own destiny. Because I have, like, you know, we spoke a little bit before we jumped on, but the economic climate at the moment, it's not looking good, right? We're probably in a recession at the moment. And we're facing potentially like a super cycle collapse type thing. Who knows what it's going to look like? For me, that's like the model that we're literally operating at the moment, and like prepare a worst case scenario. But we're also blinkers on, like as if it's not going to happen, because it might not happen. We don't know. We have no idea what's going to happen. And if it's really bad and really scary, what are you going to do about it anyway? You're probably just going to, you know, when you get socked in the head, what do? You react in the moment. Whoa, okay. Yeah. So a little bit of like a nest egg, little preparedness for a worst case scenario, and then put that to the side and just focus on the core business, and not in preparation for something that may or may not happen, but just build the strongest business you possibly can, because that's going to work for you if everything's sweet, and it's going to work for you if everything gets really bad. What's going to be, you're going to be set up the best way you possibly can.
Nice.
You know, those four keys there
should get you through.
They give you the best chance of getting you through.
Yeah.
And if nothing goes down, then it's what you should have done anyway.
It's a good tactic, because basically what you're saying is, if you think that some fucking real weird stuff's going to happen, prepare for it in some way, shape, or form, the best you know how, by, you know, maybe stacking some cash or whatever you need to do, but then just get on with it, rather than continuously every week being like, oh, I'm waiting for this thing to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you're limiting your out, and you've still done nothing. So like, what is it? What do you think is the worst possible case? Okay, and now allocate 10% of your resources. For me, that's emergency long life food. It's a bit of physical gold and silver. It's a bit of land. It's as many of my floating rates fixed as possible.
Yeah.
And then done. Not even thinking about it now. It is what it is. Now I'm going to focus on my business. Because if I'm waking up every day going, oh, is there any point in even doing this hard yakker to make this content? Because it's probably going to implode anyway. If you're constantly in the middle of the decision, right? Constantly like, oh, what's going to happen? Then it's just going to limit your output. It's going to limit your excitement. It's going to limit everything. So react. If you think, cool, do something about it. And then blinkers on. Right, core business. Let's go.
Nice one. Taking you back a fair while, what was it like, that feeling to finally repay your olds?
Oh, that was light. That was the best moment of my life. That's top three, I guess. Yeah, I'm just allowing for two others, like that may have happened, just so I don't offend anyone, you know. But yeah,
smart.
It was epic. We had this event in Matakana. We're up there. The whole team was there. I had the little chicks, and I was there with Brad, and I was crying. And actually, I wasn't crying. I forgot how to cry. But everyone else was crying, and it was like a cool moment, and we'd done it.
Your folks were there.
Yeah. And we like presented them like little like checks kind of thing, and it was clapping. And
what did they think of you? Like, and
they were like, "Oh, yeah, thanks," but we didn't really care. Like, it's all good. Like, they were a bit like, how do I say that? They're so about us and such kind, generous people. They weren't necessarily that worried.
Simon, you know, pay this back.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily that worried about it, which is what made me want to do it even more. You know, like, But yeah, that was like the culmination of a huge amount of hard work, and it was, it was the best thing I've ever done, right? Just seeing that through.
Yeah. Nice, mate.
And there was a little secret in there as well, is it did something for me. This might be a good cognitive device for people as well, is I'd made the decision that my life begins when I pay my parents back. So if I spend 4 hours tonight aimlessly watching YouTube, I know I'm going to start working again. It's going to be in a minute, in an hour, in a day, or a week. My goal is to get Like we're or a month. Back in the day, it used to be I could go off the rails for a month, then eventually get sit down and get my desk clear and go again.
Yeah.
And so the journey has been closing that cycle, and now I'm probably I'm in a matter of hours. I can reset within hours, not even days anymore. And then what I'd say to myself is like, well, if you waste 2 days here, you're just putting 2 8-days on the back end. So this is going to take you a year or a decade or your whole life.
Wow.
And so that super ridiculous, fanatical, probably manic commitment made it a lot easier to get me going because it was binary. It's like, oh, well, we're doing it anyway, so
faster you do it, the better.
Yeah, might as well get there. Again, it removed the decision.
Yeah.
Oh, like, well, like maybe it doesn't matter because I could just chill anyway. And da da da. It's like, no. The sooner you get this done, the sooner your life begins. So that black and white really helped me.
Yeah.
There might be some version of that that people can deploy.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I mean, I've had those moments where I've sat down on the couch and then in the back of my brain, it's like, this ain't going to help you get the next client. This ain't going to help, you know, fund everything. Get the fuck up. You don't really need any rest. You've just defaulted into a quick lay down. I'm like, you know what? That's right. I've probably got another couple of hours in me. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's gangster. And when it's like all I'm doing is adding hours to the back end, what's the point? And that scenario as well, unique. Like I didn't have dependents. I didn't have a family. I could do that. Mm. I was in a position to delete existence. That's obviously a good setup to reset with.
Yeah.
And not everyone has that ability, but it's like, which you still need to deliver the outcome, right? So how do you pull bits and pieces together to do that?
Yeah, mate, we're flowing through an hour here, being right. Bloody fascinating. Anything you want to leave the listeners with that we didn't touch on that you think will add value to their life?
What do I?
Any vintage Simo?
Here's one thing I'd say, and this has tripped me up every single year, is digital marketing thing, the content creation thing. It's like there's always an excuse of like, oh, I might have missed the boat. Like, yeah. I might have missed the boat. I did that every year. I did that when CPMs were $1. I did it when they were $2. Did it when they were $4. Did it when they were $8. And I've done it my whole life. And I like the boat. I didn't miss the boat. I could have jumped on the boat at any point.
Yeah.
And so just because it's like maybe more expensive today or whatever, like it is the future, and content creation and digital media is the pathway to predictable revenue generation. And so if one of the things that's holding you back is like, I've missed that wave. No, you haven't. Get on TikTok now.
Yeah.
There's plenty of waves being surfed by plenty of people. Probably way less capable, with far less sophisticated monetization capability than you. It's probably a 14-year-old kid just getting millions of views.
Yeah.
It's like, do it today.
Man, that's such a good insight, because I know even for us, we started Next Advisory 5 years ago, probably like 6 years. Well, yeah, 5 years ago, but we were sort of planning some of the social media side of things, and it was so cheap and it was so easy. And it was like you said before, run an ad and you'd get inquiry, or you'd get people messaging you and it's like, run them to the fucking messenger chat. And you know, people, oh, holy shit, you know, here's John from bloody whatever business. And then a year later, I'd be like, oh, we should have spent more last year. Then a year later, I'd be like, oh, we probably should have spent more money on marketing. And then like, oh, and you know, I said to Phil, I think it was maybe at towards year five, I said, if you could give yourself one piece of advice, you know, what would it be to the person starting this business? He was basically like, fuck, probably should have marketed more from the start.
Yeah. And it'll happen year after year after year.
And it just changes form, right? Like I was late to the party with TikTok, but then I make a video, bang, 500,000 views. And then it's like, can you come and speak about this on TV1 and shit? And you're just like, opportunities come of it. And then 2 months later, I count back and I'm like, fuck, I've made 100 videos. But if I didn't post that first video on TikTok, I wouldn't have like, but I needed to build the energy to go again on like another platform. But you know, the boat, I knew the boat was already, like it was already sailing, but it was still available to get on. But I'm like, oh, another platform. But so, you know, I knew better, and you know, so I'll fall into the trap too. I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I just don't need to do that one. But then you do, and it creates a different level of energy and even creativity and different form of content. Then you repurpose it. And now, as an example, we're running our top of our funnel for Next Advisory is basically TikTok videos and then building out awareness to come listen to this podcast, and then people end up in our funnel, retargeted, download our business planning template. 3 months later, hey, they book a call.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, spend more. I'm in the trap right now. I'm not doing it. I'll say next year. And it will happen over and over. So, yeah, get amongst it. And you said something interesting there as well. The outcomes from digital marketing, from content creation, from all the stuff, they're non-linear. So it's like 0000001, 0000003, 0000075, 100, 115. That's how the curve works. Mm. And that's what crushes people as well, because we're set up. Our dopamine and serotonin systems are set up to like win. Like, we don't like uneven return.
Yeah.
So you got to grind that first 100 videos and accept that most of them will suck. You're learning and you're going to get no outcomes. But then the outcome will repay all of that in full.
Yeah. Great advice, mate. Mate, that has been a phenomenal insight into your mind and your journey through business and even just your personal circumstances as well.
Cheers, man.
Always enjoy catching up with you and hearing what's going on in that lid of yours. And I'm looking forward to you smacking out that $15 million of net worth and all the things that I know that you're so capable of achieving. And, you know, again, from my side, for you, bro, like, I believe in you and I think so many people do. And it's so awesome to see you rebuilding yourself and tidying yourself up to a point where you can believe in yourself again. And, you know, I think, you know, there's no limit to what you'll be able to achieve. So I'm looking forward to seeing how far you get.
Thanks, bro. Visionary.
Rightio. If people want to get in touch with you, mate, what's the best way?
That's a good question. Twitter, EcomSumo, Instagram, Simon John Phillips.
Yeah.
My email. I think you can Google me. Check out my first dates episode.
I was going to play that, but I don't know if we should throw back to 2018.
Yeah. No, you can find me.
Yeah. Outstanding. All right. Cheers, mate.
Cool.
Had a feeling that I belong. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car, we go cruising the